Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Welcome to a permanent end to 20 or 30 years of Hezbollah's influence in this part of the world, and the, not just the damage it's inflicted on Israel, the damage it's inflicted on the Lebanese people. We have to remember the Lebanese people are victims of Hezbollah. The Lebanese people are victims of Iranian aggression, and this needs to stop.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio hosted direct talks between Israel and Lebanon in Washington Tuesday, the first such meeting in decades. We'll speak with former Israeli peace negotiator Daniel Levy. Meanwhile, Israel continues to bomb Lebanon. We'll go to Beirut. Then Republican Congressmember Tony Gonzalez and Democrat Eric Swalwell resign from Congress over mounting allegations of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and rape.
My delay in taking action against Eric was driven by fear, not doubt. Fear of his political power, his background as an attorney, and his family law enforcement ties.
We'll speak to Fatima Gross Graves of the National Women's Law Center. And finally, two peace activists, one Israeli, one Palestinian. Maoz Inon's parents were killed by Hamas on October 7, 2023. Aziz Abu Sara's brother died after being tortured in Israeli prison. They have a new book. It's titled The Future is Peace, A Shared Journey Across the Holy Land. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports has entered its third day. According to U.S. Central Command, the blockade is being enforced by more than 10,000 U.S. troops over a dozen warships and dozens of aircraft. Vessels traveling to or from non-Iranian ports are allowed to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. This comes after U.S.-Iran ceasefire talks collapsed over the weekend in Islamabad, Pakistan. President Trump told the New York Post Tuesday that new U.S.-Iran talks, quote, could be happening over the next 2 days. Separately, Trump told Fox News the war is, quote, close to over, unquote. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports the Pentagon sending thousands of additional troops to the Middle East in the coming days. Since the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran erupted, the U.S. military has acknowledged 399 American troops have been wounded. Iran's forensic chief told state media more than 3,000 Iranians have been killed. The president of Iran's Red Crescent Society said emergency teams had rescued more than 7,200 Iranians from rubble after U.S.-Israeli bombings. This is the Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian.
By what right did they attack our country? What had we done? For what reason did they martyr our leader? What had we done? For what reason did they martyr our commanders, our scientists, our students? What was their reason? Why? What had we done? Had we attacked anyone? Had we violated any law? What had we done?
In Washington, D.C., U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio Tuesday hosted the first direct talks between Israel and Lebanon in more than three decades. Hezbollah, which was not a party to the talks, made clear it will not abide by any agreement that results from the negotiations. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continued to bomb towns in southern Lebanon today, according to Lebanese state media. Several people were killed in a strike on the coastal town of Ansaria. According to Lebanon's health ministry, Israeli attacks have killed more than 2,100 people, wounding nearly 7,000. Over a million Lebanese have been displaced, while the World Food Program warns of a spiraling hunger crisis in the region. In Gaza, Israeli forces killed at least 11 Palestinians Tuesday, including two children, in separate attacks. Four people were killed, including a three-year-old, in a strike targeting a police vehicle in Gaza City, with at least nine bystanders wounded. Later that evening, another Israeli drone strike hit Shati refugee camp, killing several people. Gaza officials say 754 Palestinians have now been killed since October's so-called ceasefire brokered by the U.S. On Tuesday, Palestinians gathered at Al-Shifa Hospital to mourn three-year-old Yahya al-Malahi, who was killed in an Israeli airstrike.
This child, his father had him after girls. He is the only son for his father. What is his fault? What is his crime? He should be wearing a wedding suit today at his cousin's wedding. Instead, he wore a shroud stained with blood. Only God can help us.
Kuwaiti-American journalist Ahmed Shahab Eldin has been held in a Kuwaiti prison for 6 weeks. He was arrested March 3rd in Kuwait City and faces prosecution in a special tribunal. On March 2nd, he shared photos and videos of a U.S. fighter jet that crashed in Kuwait on his Substack page, content that was not exclusive to him and had appeared on other platforms. Kuwaiti authorities have charged Shahab Eldin with spreading false information, harming national security, and misusing his cell phone, which the Committee to Protect Journalists describes as, quote, vague and overly broad accusations that are routinely used to silence independent journalists, end quote. His detention is part of a wider crackdown on online speech in Kuwait and other Gulf countries during the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. In the United Arab Emirates, authorities say police detained 375 people across Abu Dhabi over the course of the war for filming and disseminating what officials called false information on social media. Shahab Eldin is a graduate of Columbia Journalism School, where he's also taught as an adjunct lecturer. He's worked with several outlets, including PBS, The New York Times, and Al Jazeera English, and has more than 2 million followers online. Italy's right-wing Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni announced Tuesday Italy is suspending its defense cooperation agreement with Israel. This comes after Israeli forces fired warning shots at an Italian UN peacekeeping convoy in Lebanon. Italy summoned Israel's ambassador in protest over the incident, which damaged at least one vehicle. Meanwhile, President Trump criticized Meloni for failing to join the U.S. in its attacks on Iran, telling an Italian newspaper, quote, I'm shocked at her. I thought she had courage, but I was wrong, Trump said. This is the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni.
Taking into account the current situation we're experiencing, the government has decided to suspend the automatic renewal of the defense agreement with Israel.
Republican Congressmember Tony Gonzalez of Texas and Democratic Congressmember Eric Swalwell of California officially resigned from Congress Tuesday. Both of them faced potential expulsion votes after they were accused of sexual misconduct. Gonzalez admitted to an affair with a former staffer who later took her own life and faces additional accusations of sending explicit messages to a campaign aide. Meanwhile, another woman has accused Congressmember Swalwell of sexual assault, saying he drugged and raped her in 2018. Lana Drews is the fifth woman to come forward with allegations against Swalwell. She spoke at a news conference in Los Angeles Tuesday.
He raped me. And he choked me. And while he was choking me, I lost consciousness. And I thought I died. It had a profound impact on my mental health. I self-medicated in an unhealthy way. I did not want to live anymore. I cried all the time for years.
The Justice Department has requested a federal appeals judge overturn convictions for members of far-right groups, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, who were previously found guilty of seditious conspiracy in connection with the January 6th insurrection. Since returning to office, President Trump has issued pardons and commutations to about 1,600 people who'd been charged in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Several leaders with the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers were granted clemency. Tuesday's filing by the DOJ would erase the convictions from their records. In Washington, D.C., an appeals court has ordered a federal judge to end his investigation into probable criminal contempt by Trump officials who deported dozens of Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador's Sekat mega prison last year in violation of a court ruling. Last March, Judge James Boasberg spurred a year-long standoff with the Trump administration after he ordered federal immigration officials to halt the U.S. deportation flights bound for El Salvador, which they ignored. Judge Boasberg then launched a probe into Trump administration officials, condemning their actions as unlawful. The ACLU's Lee Gelernt, who's the lead attorney for the Venezuelan plaintiffs in the case, condemned Tuesday's ruling by the appeals court as, quote, a blow to the rule of law. Gelernt said in a statement, quote, the stakes could not be higher if the executive branch is ultimately allowed to avoid accountability for deliberately violating a court order, especially one of this magnitude, Gelernt said. In Arizona, opposition is mounting against the Trump administration's plans to build a second border wall. The second barrier would reportedly run parallel to another border wall that's already standing along Arizona and Mexico, cutting through several wildlife refuges, national park sites, and the Thana-Othum Nation. Parallel border walls are also reportedly planned in California and New Mexico as part of Trump's crackdown on immigration. And in Tennessee, the NAACP is suing Elon Musk's XAI, accusing the artificial intelligence company of polluting black neighborhoods with toxic emissions from its makeshift power plant fueling its data centers in Memphis. The lawsuit alleges XAI is violating the Clean Air Act by operating over two dozen methane gas burning turbines without legal permits. The massive XAI data centers are known as Colossus and Colossus 2. To see our coverage of this story, go to our website, democracynow.org. We'll also be doing more on Earth Day. That's next April 22nd. In related news, Maine's become the first state in the nation to ban large data centers. Maine lawmakers Tuesday approved the statewide measure, which would prohibit the construction of new data centers that use up more than 20 megawatts of power until the fall of 2027. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio hosted the Israeli and Lebanese ambassadors in Washington Tuesday in the first direct talks between Israel and Lebanon in over 30 years. The talks come as Israel continues to bomb areas across Lebanon and expand its occupation of parts of southern Lebanon. Israel says they're focused on disarming and dismantling Hezbollah. More than 2,100 people have been killed and over a million displaced. Hezbollah, which was not a party to the talks, made clear it will not abide by any agreement that results from the negotiations and called the talks a national sin. Speaking to reporters after the talks in Washington, Israel's ambassador to the United States, Yechiel Leiter, praised the Lebanese government for standing up against Hezbollah.
The head of Hezbollah warned the government of Lebanon yesterday not to participate in these talks, and the government of Joseph Allen bravely said no to Hezbollah, and this is the beginning of a very strong and fortified, consistent battle against Hezbollah. They are weakened as they've never been, and together we'll continue to rid the threat of this Iranian proxy, which is so malign and so malignant in the region.
In a statement to Reuters, the Lebanese ambassador, Nada Mouad, described the meeting as constructive. She also called for a ceasefire, the return of the displaced to their homes, and measures to alleviate the humanitarian crisis. To discuss all this and more, we're joined in London by Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under two Israeli prime ministers. His recent op-ed for The Guardian is headlined, "What Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli Right Really Mean When They Invoke Greater Israel." Well, let's start there, Daniel Levy. What do they mean?
Good to be with you, Amy. What I tried to set out in that piece that's also on my Substack is we tend to think, understandably, that Greater Israel is exclusively about territorial expansion and settlement. And of course, that has been part of the story of Israel, and displacement of Palestinians has been the centerpiece of that. What I'm suggesting is there's something additional, more geopolitical, more strategic in play here, that Netanyahu is trying to turn Israel into a dominant regional power. It's not just about the land you take. There's a limit to, you know, small population, how far they can settle, how much sense that makes. But Israel understands that if it is going to be able to continue its policy of zero-sum eradicationism towards the Palestinians, it needs a quiescent region. And for that, it needs to be surrounded by states that have either been dismantled, that cannot therefore challenge Israel, or by states that have been co-opted, in which Israel has created relations of dependency, and often that will mean weakening a state. And so I place that in the context of this war against Iran. It needs America to achieve that. It needed America for that war against Iran. If you can remove Iran as some kind of a power balancer and deterrent, if you can, for instance, weaken the Gulf and create relations of dependency of the Gulf states on Israel significantly more than you have today, then that power project begins to look possible. I think it's overreach. Israel will tell us it's deterrence, but it's domination. Israel will tell us it's survival, but it's hegemony. I don't think they can achieve it, but to understand what one is confronting, one needs to understand what is being attempted here by the Israeli side, and that is what I suggest they are trying to achieve.
So talk about these rare negotiations that took place in Washington, overseen by the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the first time Israel and Lebanon have held negotiations in over 30 years. Of course, they didn't include Hezbollah, and Israel continued its attacks on Lebanon. One of Israel's key ultimatums is the disarmament of Hezbollah. Can you talk about how these negotiations are unfolding?
Yeah, let me try and do that. There were, by the way, meetings in Nakura, in Lebanon, at the end of last year, of official Israeli and Lebanese teams, which were very unusual in December and January, December 25, January 2026. But I guess this kind of official termed as a negotiation hasn't been seen for an awfully long time. Now, what the Israeli side comes to this with is something that is designed to sound eminently reasonable. Of course, if there is a non-state actor that should not be able to carry arms and decide when the state of Lebanon is taken to war, and therefore, what could be more obvious than a disarmament in that context? Take a step back and let's understand why the position Israel is asserting is anything but reasonable. You have a resistance in Lebanon, you have an armed group, and you have a very weak central state, partly because that's a deterrent strategy by Iran. But it only is sustainable because Israel is a country that has invaded Lebanon, I think it's seven times now, maintained a military occupation of the south of Lebanon, and established its own proxy militia to run that for 18 years. 1982 to 2000. Since then, continues to violate Lebanese airspace, Lebanese sovereignty on a daily basis, even since the ceasefire reached in November 2024. There have been, as of a couple of months ago, the UN counted 10,000 Israeli violations, 300 Lebanese killed during the so-called ceasefire. If that sounds familiar from Gaza, well, it should. And so the idea that Israel can come to the table with clean hands, make these demands of a Lebanese government that it knows is in no position to implement that. It also knows that this Lebanese government did try and create the political conditions where you could begin to move towards at least the south of Lebanon and then later the rest of Lebanon, where a political arrangement could be reached that Hezbollah would not carry on with this same capacity. Israel knows that what it is doing here is it is trying to put something that sounds reasonable on the table, but with the intention of embarrassing and humiliating the Lebanese government, which cannot carry these things through because it, Israel, has created the conditions which makes that impossible. And it did so. Let's just remind ourselves, it did so off the back of one of the most violent, destructive and ugly military strikes against a country that has known very many bad days, Lebanon, on the day after the ceasefire was declared. So Israel creates the worst possible conditions in which to make a demand which is intended to not be achievable, and it seems to throw Lebanon back into a civil war. That's an outcome that Israel openly talks about. Let me say something, Amy. When I was involved as a negotiator, the first thing I learned, the first thing I was told, is if you're going to have a successful negotiated outcome, not a diktat, not a military imposed outcome, but a negotiated outcome, you have to think that each party needs to come away with this with a victory narrative that they can go back to their public with their dignity intact. And Israel is doing the precise opposite, including the words we heard from the ambassador yesterday, designed to embarrass his Lebanese interlocutor, designed again to embarrass the Lebanese government. This is not an exercise in problem solving. This is an exercise in trying to pursue a zero-sum agenda, which has nothing in it for the Lebanese side.
Finally, if you can talk about what's continuing to happen in the West Bank and Gaza, the number of people who have died just in the last few days, let alone the hundreds since the so-called ceasefire.
Yeah, and I so appreciate you pulling us back to that, because that's the story that so many people want to leave behind, move on from, pretend isn't there. Yeah. We are told that there is a ceasefire in Gaza. During that ceasefire, in excess of 700 Palestinians have been killed. There have been killings every day. Israel continues to occupy directly over 60% of the Gaza territory. Israel continues to conduct daily military operations to prevent much of what is desperately needed, and simultaneously to pursue its most destructive campaign in the West Bank that we have seen in decades, probably since 1967. We're hearing that, for instance, Marwan Barghouti, a prisoner in Israeli jails, has been roughed up, badly beaten on a number of occasions recently. We've seen images of Palestinians being allowed to return to refugee camps in Jenin for the first time in an awfully long time, and seeing the destruction that has taken place there. It only makes sense in the context of what Israel itself defines as the pursuit of what it calls total victory, which means the permanent displacement of Palestinians physically, but also displacement of the idea that a Palestinian national collective will ever have its rights, its basic freedoms. And that is all continuing for one very simple reason: that Israel has been emboldened and empowered, and that's true on the Palestinian front, but it's also true regionally. That's why America was sucked into this war. Israel has been emboldened and empowered by the impunity with which it has been treated for decades, never held accountable, and that encourages what we see today, which is horrible to behold, not only in terms of what it is doing to Palestinians, Lebanese, the region, but also what it means in terms of the extremism inside Israeli society itself, how consent in society was manufactured for an ongoing genocide.
Daniel Levy, I want to thank you for being with us, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Yitzhak Rabin and Prime Minister Ehud Barak. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go now on the ground to Lebanon, where the Israeli military bombed towns in southern Lebanon today, according to the Lebanese state media. Several people were killed in a strike in the coastal town of Ansaria. According to Lebanon's health ministry, Israeli attacks have killed over 2,100 people, wounding nearly 7,000. Over a million Lebanese have been displaced. 40,000 homes have been destroyed or heavily damaged. We go now to Beirut, where we're joined by the investigative journalist and writer Leila Younis. Her latest piece for Drop Site News headline, Massive Israeli Assault on Lebanon Threatens U.S.-Iran Ceasefire. Leila, your own family's village in the south, in Bint Jebel, right near the border with Israel, was bombed just yesterday. Before I ask you about the response to the Israel-Lebanon negotiations taking place in Washington, can you tell us about your village and how you found out about what's been destroyed in this latest bombing?
Thanks for having me back, Amy. What we're finding out about our village is really the way that everyone in the border region is learning about what's happening in their villages, which is through satellite imagery that is being released. Much of it from the Israeli military. So they've kind of revealed these before and after shots. We saw one also from a few days ago of the village of Al-Khiem. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Where you see literally what was once a built environment reduced to dust. And the same thing with Bint Jebel. So yesterday we received imagery of the very famous hundreds-year-old mosque of the village, the Grand Mosque of Bint Jebel, basically flattened. And so that's really how we're learning about the destruction of our homes is through satellite imagery, because we can't be there because it is obviously the forefront of this battle.
So what are your family members saying? And what do you understand the rest of the world understands about what's happening in southern Lebanon? As Israel says, they're just trying to disarm, to wipe out Hezbollah.
Well, what we're seeing is it's a scorched earth campaign. I mean, we're seeing images similar to those that we saw in Gaza, which is civilian areas reduced to rubble. I shouldn't have to tell you that this is obviously against international law to target civilian areas in this way. They're going in with armored bulldozers. You know, they begin with their artillery shelling and they go in and then they tear up the street, they tear up the homes. And of course, many of these areas were severely damaged in the last round of fighting in 2024. And they're sort of finishing them off now, particularly, again, the border region where they're able to actually reach these areas with these bulldozers. I mean, I think what the world should know is that we will return to these villages. And when we do, we'll return to rubble and it will be an immense process of rebuilding. And, you know, I think, Amy, like for us, you know, it's not just real estate that is lost when these homes are destroyed. It's not just a house. It's our grandparents built these structures. These structures are you know, sacred to the families of these regions, you know, in the same way that the Israeli military flattened vast swaths of Gaza's cultural heritage, universities, mosques, archives. The same thing is happening in southern Lebanon. It's this exact same playbook. What is being used or being explained in terms of some self-defense strategy is really, in fact, an effort at, destroying a people.
Leila, can you respond to what's happening in Washington with Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, presiding over the first negotiations between Israel and Lebanon in over 30 years? Hezbollah is not included. What is your analysis and the response of people on the ground in Lebanon as Israel continues to bomb Lebanon through these talks?
The Lebanese people is deeply divided on the question of negotiating directly with Israel. I've spoken to people on both sides, in both camps. You know, those who kind of stand with the government in these negotiations will tell you, hey, listen, you know, we're a poor Mediterranean nation, unable to stand up to Israel militarily. Look at Egypt, look at Jordan. They look like they're doing all right with their normalization agreements. Why can't we do the same? But of course, a very large percentage of the country, particularly the majority in the areas under the heaviest bombardment, are vehemently opposed to negotiations, primarily because Lebanon is still being bombed, as you just said. You know, just this morning, right, an aid van on the highway and the coastal highway in the south was bombed. We see images of, you know, baby.